Books of the Bible. 2 Samuel tells about King David's reign over Israel. Even though David was a man after God's heart, he still gave in to temptation and suffered bitter consequences. Yet David repented of his sin and was forgiven by God. Remember, there is only one perfect and faultless king, Jesus Christ. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is he going to be self-serving again?
Yes. Yes, he is. This is Wretched Radio. A young man writing in asking, hey, are there any implications to who picks up the tab on a date? I say, yeah, there's big implications. And it is a question that men, young men, are having to ask and answer, unlike preceding generations, which is why I can't tell you exactly what and who. But this big new initiative that we're going to be launching on Monday, encouraging you to become a participant in, it is going to help specifically young men answer those questions. Can't wait to share it with you. And here, this'll be cryptic enough for you. And regarding this effort to try to help young Gen Z men, I'm just gonna give you a one-word hint, and you can try to sort it until we announce it on Monday. Here it is. Kanye. Please send questions, comments, conundrums, snarks to idea@wretched.org.
All right. This one
involves Kanye. What does he call himself now?
Ye? Yeah.
By the way, did you read this poor fellow? He's lost. He has issues with Jesus. He just has some stuff that Jesus needs to get worked out. Oofta. That fellow, he's like a balloon, just kind of floating all over the place, which is a reminder. We got to wait for those balloons to land. When we see a celebrity profession of faith, when we hear it, just give it time. Just let it get sorted, because time will reveal how well they're doing and the genuine nature of their profession. idea@wretched.org.
All right, this question is from Lewis. Todd, I've just been seeing so many things on the internet, either for or against, but I was just wondering, is there anything that was biblical about the eclipse that happened this week?
No, absolutely not. But a reminder, does the Bible ever talk about end times and the sun being darkened? Yes. You would say, well, then that's what the eclipse was. Yes, it was. But then it raises the question, what is the purpose of these signs? And the purpose of the signs is to remind us that Jesus is coming back, not when. And we really need to be careful with this. This isn't heresy stuff that we're dealing with here. But I do believe that if we are going to really trust Jesus when he said, nobody knows the day or the hour, I don't think that means nobody can pinpoint the second. I don't even think we can pinpoint the season. We have been living in the last days for 2,000 years. And of course, we're closer to the end. And even if we see a proliferation of these signs, whether it's the sun getting blotted, whether it is earthquakes, wars, rumors of wars, the love of man growing cold, even if we see that intensifying, to say, well, so it looks like we're getting, I can't tell you the day, but look, we're getting, that's doing the same thing. And I think that we need to avoid any of those hints that, well, yeah, I think now we're in like the last days. Nobody knows the exact time. So why did Jesus give us those signs? To remind us he's definitely coming back. Don't freak out. And if we didn't understand as much as we do these days about the sun and the movement of the planets, etc., you lived in a pagan society that was ill-educated. Whoa, the sun, what happened to the sun? This is apocalyptic, which, by the way, has gone on in a lot of cultures for a lot of millennia. It seems to be a bit of a fascination. We might see those signs and panic about it, but you might hear about an earthquake and think, well, that's definitely it. No, it's a reminder that he's coming back. Don't panic. Don't be a pagan who goes into a tizzy because the sun got a little bit dark. Those signs are encouragements. They're not markers. It's Jesus' way of saying, don't worry, I've got this. It's all on schedule. Everything that is happening, I'm orchestrating all of it. And if you're getting panicky about what's happening in the world, you need to look up. And I'm actually going to be an alarm clock for you to remind you of the truth. I win. I'm winning. I'm going to win. And I'm going to return. And I brought you onto my team. And therefore, you're going to be on the winning side. So here's an earthquake. Don't forget. That's the purpose of the signs. And by the way, I do believe it was, I just watched Gabe Hughes' what video on the eclipse, which by the way, I really want eclipse talk to be done because I keep singing Bonnie Tyler in my head and I never liked that song. He talked about in 2017, the number of false teachers that talked, this is it. I'm telling you, if we kept track of all of the preachers who said, okay, the war in Israel, we heard people say this. Okay, we can't say that it's like going to happen tomorrow because of the war in Israel, but no buts. We don't know what God is doing. His chess table, it is undiscernible to us. We do not have that vantage point. And these false prophets who keep telling us, oh, this is when it's going to happen. This has been going on for centuries, frankly. Jesus is going to return. Jesus, and he doesn't, and he doesn't. Nobody's been right yet. There have been plenty of those false prophecies. 2017, people were making them. What did anybody mark that? No. By the way, we would also do well to write down when you hear one of those apocalyptic messages, not in a Christian way, but in a cultural way, like the stock market is going to crash, that we're going to have food shortages, etc. Write those down because I haven't written them down, but I've been listening to them for years. And I remember with when Joe Biden was elected, that's it. Start stocking up on food. And did we see some supply line stuff that was challenging? Yes, we definitely did. But none of us have missed a meal because of that. They were wrong. And all of these doomsdayers, now there are going to be times when you make a decision because, you know what, there's enough information, definitive information here that I'm going to heed that warning. So I'm not saying that nobody's ever right. But it's my experience most of the time when people talk about these apocalyptic events, whether Christian or secular, their batting average stinks. 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Jacob. Todd, a family member has a dance show coming up that they've asked me to attend.
It's a dance show?
Uh-huh. Yeah, a dance show.
Okay.
And one of the dances isn't very PG rated, but they did say that I could leave in between and not watch that specific dance. But I'm just wondering, if I go, would I be supporting something God doesn't support?
Conscience issue. I've got a sense of it, but that's my sense of it because I can imagine somebody saying, look, if I walk out when that thing, you know, I know that's dance number four. I'm going to get up at the end of dance number three and I'm not going to come back till dance number five. I'm not going to expose myself. I made a covenant with my eyes. I don't want to be participating in watching lewd behavior. I get that. I can also see somebody saying, but you go to that thing, and as a believer, people are like, hey, what are you doing as a Christian participating in something like that? I think it's a conscience issue, and I think that we should allow grace on some of these issues for one another. This would be one of those. And please remember, with some of these things, none of us ever really knows for sure what we decide until we're actually in the situation. That always brings a gravity into the process that makes you really think it through well. But as we do, I would suggest this. We probably have more of a propensity these days to figure out a way to make it happen than to be thinking in light of what will this do for my testimony? Testimony is, in fact, in Wretched Worldview 1 and 2, he's being self-serving again. did I just become Jim Gaffigan? Is that what I'm doing here? That we remember testimony. One of the processes, one of the components is testimony. You want to take a look at explicit Bible verses, implicit Bible verses. You want to consider how the gospel informs this. You say, what gospel informs whether I go to a dance show or not? Yeah, because the gospel has rescued you from dark, bad things. And participating in those things is to contradict the message of the gospel itself. You take a look at church history. What did others think about these things? They're not infallible, but they do have some wisdom, some of those dead people. And you consider testimony. That is a weighty issue. And I sense this in myself. I see it in others too. So believe me, I'm not doing it from a perch of superiority when I say that I think that most of us lean toward figuring out ways to make it happen so that we can participate, so that we don't ruffle anybody's feathers, so that we don't cause any family division. Let's just figure out a way to make it happen. Hold on. Now, you can consider that. But I would suggest to you the bigger consideration is, what does God think about this? And what will others think about God if they see me doing this? This is Wretched Radio. If you're familiar with the Tomorrow Club's outstanding ministry, oh, what a testimony. Eastern Europe, Africa, poor, poor, poor places. The Tomorrow Clubs go in. They assemble the kids every week, preach the gospel, have them memorize the Bible, sing songs, love on them, give them some treats. It has been an outstanding ministry for over 20 years, and it's growing like a nobody's business, and it is a testimony to their faithfulness that over 50% of the Tomorrow Club volunteer leaders were Tomorrow Club kid attendees. Now they, in their villages, are teaching the kids the gospel as volunteers for the Tomorrow Clubs. I got to tell you, that is a testimony. If you love supporting evangelistic ministries that are faithful, that actually preach repentance and faith, it's an outstanding ministry. If you can support it, would commend them to you by visiting tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Well, in a world that is undeniably cluttered with quick fixes and superficial solutions, now comes a journey into the heart of real change. I'm talking about Transformed Season 3. It's finally here, and we're inviting you into the lives of individuals that are facing the giants of fear and guilt and grief. But hey, there's a twist. These aren't your typical battles. These battles have been fought with the sword of the Spirit and the shield of faith. You'll witness loneliness and overeating and relational tension met with grace, truth, and love that can only come from the one who knows us the best. This season's not just about watching others. It's about seeing yourself and your struggles and the path to true transformation through biblical counseling. We'll together dive deep into the heart of what it means to be transformed. Transformed Season 3 can be found right now at wretched.org/transformed3.
Who will speak for those who are staggering to the slaughter? Seems like right now would be a good time to encourage you to support Preborn Ministries. They're in it. It's a little complex out there with the internet and ordering pills. They're in the game. They're working hard to save babies and save mommies and daddies with the gospel. So if you are energized about life, that's something you can do. You can support Preborn. They provide free ultrasounds despite the accusations of all pro-life clinics. They are holistic. They do care about the mommy too. And they care for the family, and they provide training. And it is literally a way that if you have the means, you can be saving a life. Amazing ministry. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
Hermeneutics. A vital part of biblical hermeneutics is an understanding of genre. One genre we find in Scripture is an epistle. Epistles are letters written to the church at large or to a specific church which contain doctrine, theological arguments, and practical application. God uses first century correspondence to deliver his timeless truth.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
How much easier does this need to be? This is Wretched Radio. Not only can you send wretched stuff to idea@wretched.org, you can text questions, comments, conundrums, snarks. It's as easy as sending a text to 877-282-2337.
And that's exactly what Anonymous did. They recently texted in and said, Todd, I was wondering about the NASB 20. If it's a sound variation of the NASB 95.
Is it a mostly reliable translation? Yes. Did they make positive advancements when they updated it from 1995? No. I don't think that they did. They took some editorial liberties that I think are off. In not like the whole thing is a mess, but it's typically the issue of genders. When translations get updated, and as a rule, we shouldn't be that concerned about updated translations because language changes. And an editor then can go in and update it if they don't change the actual text itself. And typically what we will see in updated versions, I think we saw this with the NIV, to a degree with the NASB, the man versus people. In some instances, they got it right. In other instances, they got it very wrong. And they bent more toward an egalitarian position in some of their editorial choices. So personally, I stick with the 1995 version. And besides that, I just can't. I've tried. I really tried to read other translations. I just can't. It's like I'm being unfaithful. We got married in 1995, and I'm not going to go looking for a new translation. Jimmy, did you read the Legacy Bible translation?
Actually, I've made the switch to it. I know.
You're unfaithful to NASB 1995.
You're not going to notice that much of a difference.
No, I've looked into it enough, but I don't know. It's like, that's the one I've always read. I'm just going to stick with it at this point. But I've heard really good things about the Legacy. What do you like about it?
I like the bringing back of Yahweh in the Old Testament. Yep, right. I like that. I like that they maintain the capitalization of the pronouns, which some translations have stopped doing. Well, that's a pet peeve.
But that's not
I know, but
that's
still.
That's more of a grammar than it is an editorial.
Right, right.
That, you know what? I've got to capitalize pronouns when it talks about the Lord. It's like, even if it's something inconsequential, I go back and, I didn't capitalize him. I just have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say you're sinning if you don't, but it's really close. So you like the Legacy Bible?
I do.
Okay, here's a thought experiment for you. Here's a challenge for you. The issue of translations and chapters and word break, the Legacy Bible lays it out a little bit differently compared to other translations.
Right.
They put the verse wherever it's on a new line.
Right.
Okay. And I'm sure that their reasoning behind it was to make sure that people, it was just probably just easier for tracking. But those numbers and those paragraph breaks aren't in the original manuscripts. Now, please, I believe that they have been very helpful. Otherwise, your pastor would start out by saying, please turn to the book of Romans and go to about 2/3 of the way down because that's about where now they're very helpful in helping us identify to memorize. But there is a danger in having verse numbers and paragraph breaks. I think there's the two dangers would be that sometimes we miss the flow, and I'm not talking about the diner waitress. We miss the thrust and the movement of the argument that is being made because they're broken up. And an example of that, because I've been seeing it as we've been preaching our way through the Gospel of Matthew, is in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus is talking about money. Hold on. Jesus is talking about chapter 6. All right, so verse 24, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. And then inserted, because it's in italics, it says as a headline, do not be anxious. Oh, okay, so we're moving on to a new thought. We're going to talk about anxiety. The two are connected. Now, not every translation does this, but the ESV that I'm holding It goes into do not be anxious. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious. Well, that therefore connects money and anxiety. And because the paragraph break is there, and even frankly, because the numbering system is implemented, you miss the flow of that. Here's a challenge for you. Go to the internet and find an epistle and read it without any of the paragraph breaks or any of the numbers and see if it doesn't feel different to you. Just see if it doesn't make more sense of the argument. I think that is especially helpful in the Epistle of James. We've often heard it described as the New Testament book of Proverbs. No, it's not. It has a flow. And I think what moves us toward understanding these are just little proverbial statements is the numbering system. I'm not saying we should do away with it. I'm just saying we're not getting the original and potentially we're losing the thrust of the argument. Here's the second danger with the paragraph breaks and the numbering system, I think. Even expositors can miss the flow of the book or the flow of the section because of the paragraph breaks. For instance, the Sermon on the Mount. I don't fall on the side of it was a number of separate teachings that Matthew compiled and just kind of put it together to give us a sampling of his teaching style. I don't think that's the case. Now, whether you want to call it a sermon or teaching, I think it's more teaching, but they're not disjointed thoughts. They flow together, and that so much is missed. Here's what can happen, and maybe, dear pastor, this is something you can keep an eye out for. You want to be an expositor, and it's a natural paragraph break, so you go there, and you grab that paragraph, and you just mine it for all it's worth. And that's good. And that can be a right use of the text if you're doing a topical sermon. But if you do that without understanding the flow of the argument, you're going to miss it. Now, here's case in point. The Sermon on the Mount. What was Jesus doing with that sermon? Was he just kind of shooting out one-liners on divorce and taking oaths and looking with lust? Oh, there's the Beatitudes. No, he starts out with the Beatitudes. And he moves then to reveal what a born-again Christian looks like, what the standard for entrance into that kingdom is, and demolish the Pharisaical system of external religiosity. That is the thrust of the entire sermon. And so if you just go into that sermon, for instance, and you're taking a look at it, you want to preach on the you've heard it said of old, thou shalt not commit adultery. Okay. Can you go to that section to talk about lust? Yep. Can you go to that section to talk about where sin begins? Absolutely. Can you go to that paragraph that if you look with lust, you've committed adultery in your heart and talk about sexual purity and that we should not be willing to say, I'm a Christian with this propensity? No, if it's sinful, you reject it. You do not have that a part of your identity. You can do all of that. But that's not what Jesus was doing in the text. It's not what he was doing. Now, all of those things are right. But Jesus was smashing external religiosity. He was helping the hearers understand you don't have a chance. And that is why there's at least two instances throughout the Sermon on the Mount. Be perfect, just as your heavenly Father is perfect. And his comments on adultery are connected to that. See, this is the standard. Your righteousness needs to exceed the scribes and the Pharisees. You ever look with lust? You aren't even coming close, are you? That was the purpose of that passage. And again, I will say this so that you don't think that we toss out all of the details and that we stop plumbing the depths of these texts. But if we do it without a context, I think it misses the oomph. If you read through the Sermon on the Mount from beginning to end, by the time Jesus finally goes about the business of landing the plane, when he gets to Matthew chapter 7, verse 13, he's finally going to give gospel. Hey, you don't have a chance. Your mouth has been impure. Your eyes are impure. Your thought life is impure. You don't love the way that you're supposed to love. You're phony in your religiosity. You don't pray the way that you should. You're taking stupid blasphemous oaths. You're not treating women well in divorce. And not only that, here's the coup de grace. Here's the coup d'etat. Here's like the nail into the coffin of your self-righteous heart. Are you ever judgmental, critical, censorious? I can't do any of this. And that then is when Jesus says, enter by the narrow gate. For wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go into it. The narrow gate is difficult, the way that leads to life. And there are few who find it. It's a plea. We should be undone by the Sermon on the Mount. I can't climb that mountain of righteousness. Bingo. Now you're ready for good news. And if we lose the thrust of that because a paragraph breaks, well, we can be doing some good expositing, but it could be expositing that misses the point. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.